Good morning, party people. Welcome back home to Las Vegas. I was out at Boston for the last week for Sequel Saturday Boston. Had a great time. Always love the in-person events. There's something totally magical about seeing people eye to eye, seeing whether or not they get the topics that you're trying to explain to them, seeing them, like, hearing the applause, seeing people, like, take notes is another one of my favorite things to see. When the lights go on and all of a sudden someone realizes, oh, this explains something that I'm facing, and they take notes. When people come up to you afterwards, I can't emphasize enough how much everybody in the community should be trying to attend local and regional events. It's so empowering. And then in later stages of your career, actually getting up on stage and giving back, volunteering to speak at your local events, volunteering to help organize them, even if you don't want to get up in front of a crowd. These events always, like SQL Saturdays and Data Saturdays, always need help with taking attendance as people come in, putting together the packets for the speakers, for the attendees, organizing lunch. It's really, these events are built on the back of volunteers. So check out SQLSaturday.com and DataSaturday.com to see if there's an upcoming event near you. And you can sign up for email notifications as well to get emailed whenever they have these events. I'm probably going to be at Data Center, SQL Saturday Boston going forward for most of their upcoming events. They typically tend to do these once a year, but I'll probably be at that one every year because the timing works out really well for my schedule. We have friends up in Salem and Boston that we love to go see every fall, and fall's nice for like winter and or for like the leaves changing in Salem, things like that. And then I happen to get back in Vegas, and it's absolutely perfect outside. Oh my gosh, the weather's amazing. The highs are in the 70s each day, low 80s, so it's absolutely perfect. We'll be home for a couple of weeks, then doing our first gay cruise. I've heard a lot about these gay cruises put on by a company called Atlantis. And the videos are absolutely overwhelming. Oh my God, when you go see them, I think I signed up for it not really understanding what I was getting myself into, but we'll see how that goes. Looking forward to that. And it's going to be on Halloween. They just sent out the list of Halloween costumes. I don't think I'm probably going to do an office hours on board that, because based on if you Google for what the pictures look like, it seems like it's kind of crazy over the top. So probably your office hours for the next several weeks are probably going to be all out of Vegas. So let's get into your top voted questions from PollGab. Let's see here. Top voted question from PollGab. Let me refresh my page. I'm out here in a little bit more sketchy cell phone coverage, so I gotta refresh my page from time to time. Bruce asks, howdy, when, if ever, would you recommend implementing a SQL Server central management server? Well, you know what I always say is, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Rather than just pointing at a tool and saying, Brent, when should I use this? Brent, what about this tool over here? So try to think about it as, what's the problem that you need to solve? What's the thing that you're facing that will make you reach for tools? In the case of a central management server, it's when you need to run code against a lot of SQL servers and you want a central repository for their authentication and their locations. It can be useful if you're doing multi-server work with PowerShell, for example, with DBA tools. But just going forward, to honor everyone's time, myself included, make sure to think about what problem you're trying to solve rather than pointing at a feature and asking when to use it. Next up, Imposter Syndrome asks, are multi-terabyte databases really all that rare? I have several that are over 10 terabytes, but I don't think of myself as being in a top 1% company. So a long time ago, back in the late 1990s, the benchmark for a large database, or a VLDB, very large database, was considered 1 terabyte or a billion rows in one table. These days, at least with my SQL Constant Care data that gathers diagnostic data from thousands of SQL servers around the world every day, about 10% of the SQL servers in the world are 1 terabyte or higher. So the interesting thing with that is if you think about the number of servers that you have, odds are you have more than 10 servers So odds are pretty good that you've got a 1 terabyte database or a 1 terabyte server. So they're not really all that large anymore. These days, what I would consider very large databases starts around about 5 terabytes to 10 terabytes. Those are in the top 1% of SQL servers worldwide. Next up, speaking of imposter syndrome, Like Herding Cats asks, hey Brent, you mentioned in the past that you deal with imposter syndrome. I think really everyone in tech does. If you're not dealing with imposter syndrome, you're likely overconfident in your capabilities. Continues, being the SQL guru that you are, do you still have doubts when it comes to SQL Server? If so, how do you manage those thoughts? One of the best things that Paul Randall ever taught me was be very comfortable saying, I don't know. If there's something that you don't know, just come out and flat out, I don't know what the answer to that is, but here are the places that I would go and look for that answer. So then that way you can be honest with your audience about where your expertise lies and where you have to go digging for additional data. I'm very comfortable saying I don't know. So for example, SQL Server contains a lot of products in the box: integration services, analysis services, reporting services, service broker, replication. And these are all areas where I can very confidently say, I just don't know anything about those. I can point you to the people that I would talk to about them. But if you're hiring me for that, you're making a bad decision for those particular features. I think the thing that a lot of full-time database administrators and database developers struggle with is they believe that they're not allowed to say, I don't know, and that drives them to feel more like an imposter because they get a lot of questions they don't know the answer to. I am totally comfortable getting questions that I don't know the answer to. After all, technology is huge and ever-changing. Although I do find it kind of funny that with most of the questions in office hours, I tend to know the answers. That also indicates to me that y'all know well which kinds of questions you could ask me and which questions don't make as much sense for me. Stefano asks, hi Brent, I make extensive use of temp tables for complex reporting or data extraction queries, particularly for pre-processing data from linked servers. My TempDB is fast and capacious. Are there any drawbacks to this approach? I'm specifically answering your question of, do you see any drawbacks? Because obviously there are benefits for you. They seem to be working well for you from a performance perspective. You said a couple of key terms. Your TempDB is fast and capacious. First off, the TempDB disks being fast is one thing, but remember, SQL Server is going to work in RAM as long as it can with your TempDB data pages. So the more stuff that you're doing in TempDB, the more you are stealing away from data that could be cached in memory for your user tables, indexes, etc. So that's one possible drawback. No matter how fast your storage is, you're still robbing RAM as you're working with these temp tables. The other drawback, you said it's capacious. Well, in things like a data warehouse, imagine that you've got a 100 gig table, a 200 gig table, whatever, and your users aren't doing a good job of filtering. It's really easy for lots of users simultaneously to be running queries that dump stuff into TempDB for processing. And you can easily run out of 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes, whatever. And I'll tell you a story. So I had a client who was dealing with outages around the same time every day. And as we dug into it, it turned out that a data scientist would come into work, talk to their friends, have some coffee, whatever, sit down at their laptop, fire off like 20 different queries in different tabs in Management Studio, all of which were just absolutely hammering the server. And then while that did its thing, he would go off to meetings, go talk, you know, have other coffees, whatever. So the time wasn't exactly predictable, but this one person was running a denial of service attack against their SQL Server. If you get your users too accustomed to doing large stuff in TempDB like that, it's very easy for each user, each power user, to run dozens of queries simultaneously or schedule queries simultaneously. And the resource that may be capacious today may not be capacious tomorrow. The other thing I would say is don't rely on that technique to work at every company that you work for. That as you work for other companies, you may find that their TempDB may not be as fast as or capacious, and you may have to learn new tricks. But who cares, right? That's true with every company you switch between. The stuff that you learn today may not work tomorrow. We just always get to learn stuff. So. Next up, Dupinder says, what's your opinion of the various AI engines' capabilities to optimize T-SQLs and stored procedures? Which one is the best? I would encourage you not to think of one biblical answer that is going to be correct across all your query optimization needs, across all your index optimization needs. Instead, you want to have accounts on Anthropic, Claude, Google Gemini, ChatGPT. You want to cycle between them periodically and try different engines to see, because they also change like every 30 days. They change really fast and furious. And if you're the kind of shop that wants to submit the queries to a local LLM, look, I'm totally understand. Some folks are worried about privacy, security, whatever. That's totally fine. You can run a local LLM. In that case, the results change every week. Like new state-of-the-art models come out all the time. And Reddit is your friend there. So on Reddit, look at the subreddit Local Llama. That focuses on running LLMs locally, and they're tuning them, doing reviews, things like that. But really, don't just lean on one of them, because it's going to change just way too frequently. Culloden says, hey, Brent, have you participated in any recent DBA interviews for your clients? If so, have you noticed any trends in what skill sets employers are seeking? So no, I haven't participated in any DBA interviews in the last year. The hiring really slowed down a lot in the Microsoft database space. No, really just all tech spaces, not just Microsoft databases, but all tech. Hiring slowed down dramatically. A lot of companies are using the excuse of AI to do layoffs, while at the same time, there are also just economic headwinds in the United States and globally that make it challenging for companies to hire in. I'd also say that right now, the United States government's recent change on H-1B visas makes it really hard to hire in the United States. Even if your company is not hiring H-1B people, the problem is that companies that did hire H-1B people are now suddenly looking at this $100,000 a year expense per employee and going, oh my gosh, we should either outsource all of this to a branch in India, or we're going to have to start competing much harder for the remaining United States labor pool, you know, so then the cost on those go up. I also just constantly laugh that I've had more than one client say we're outsourcing work to AI, and by AI we mean actually Indians, because the hiring market over there is so affordable compared to the United States. Next up, Parameter Sensitive Boyfriend says, I have a terminology question. If I have a query with option recompile that has massive variation in performance based on what arguments are passed in, is it considered parameter sensitive? I don't think you've got that terminology quite right. What the terminology really means, if the query is parameter sensitive, is that if it's sensitive to parameter sniffing. If you sniff one set of parameters and it produces an execution plan that performs horribly for other parameters and vice versa, that's really where we mean parameter sensitive plans. But what you're describing doesn't rule out the ability to get one execution plan that works well for everybody. That you even just with option recompile, it could be that you're running for short date ranges and large date ranges. And of course, it takes different lengths of time to process 100 rows versus 100 million rows. But that doesn't mean that you can't have one good query plan that works well for both of those. Next up, My T Got Cold says, people tell me that 32 gigs of RAM is enough for a high-end gaming PC. I'm looking to build one, but my DBA instincts say that anything less than 100 gigs is unacceptable. How do you resolve this conflict in your own machines? Okay, so you're asking the guy standing in front of a Rolls-Royce, the PC that I use is part of, like, my vital happiness when working in tech. I spend thousands of hours a year sitting in front of my PCs. So the cost of 128 gigs of RAM, in the grand scheme of things, really isn't that important for something that you spend thousands of hours a year sitting in front of. Now, if you are cost constrained and you don't spend that much time gaming, do what I do. Don't get a gaming PC. Get a PlayStation. Get either a PlayStation or an Xbox. I used to do gaming PCs. They are so expensive and unreliable. Oh my God, I would have like NVIDIA driver updates come out, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm having all kinds of frame rate problems, or I can't play the resolution that I want to play. So I switched over to PS5, and I've never looked back. It's awesome. I can do 4K gaming on my projector. I don't have to worry about driver updates. The thing just works. I don't ever have to worry about a Windows update slowing down the PC that I'm trying to work on. They're just great. Because for me personally, when I sit down to game, I want to unplug. Like, I want to unwind, totally relax. And so for me, PS5 was absolutely the answer. And say also, I'm not very good of a gamer. I think I've got 2,000 hours in Dead by Daylight, the one game that I play the most. And I still feel like I suck at that, like I'm not very good. I have a really good time, and every now and then I smoke somebody else, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not that bad. I will also say, for people out there who play Dead by Daylight, I have not played in the last 45 days or so, since before the Crossu PTB. I stopped playing just because I have other stuff going on at work. I'm setting up for a Black Friday sale. I had a bunch of vacations in a row. I'm also going to try to make it all the way through October and November without playing Dead by Daylight. I'm going to try to not play it at all that whole entire time. Because I think the balance is so messed up right now. Like, it's really bad for killers right now. I main survivor, but I think the balance is really unfair for killers right now, and it's kind of a hot mess of a gameplay, and buggy as hell. And it's changing so fast, like the Crossu and the palette stuff. The rest of you are like, what on earth is going on here? But like the palette rebalancing. So I'm kind of just taking a couple months off of it, and then I'll see in the new year whether or not the gameplay is stabilized and whether or not I want to continue with that. And also, having that drawing that line in the sand makes it easier for me to temporarily work more. So with my business, so we run an annual Black Friday sale, and every November, roughly half of my income comes in during the Black Friday sales. So the more that I work on that, and the more that I promote it, market it, release new courses, etc., the better that I do financially the rest of the year, or that income sustains me through the rest of the year. So avoiding Dead by Daylight for a couple of months this year, it's the first time I've ever tried this, may result in increased income. Not that I'm going to be all work and all and no play, but I'm going to just try and skip Dead by Daylight for a while and see what happens. Those of you who play Dead by Daylight, my name is Define_Drunk. Define_Drunk is my player name. I usually main Ash, or what's the name of the woman who begins with a Y? There's a character who begins with a Y, and she has this really cool fox tail, and I like playing her. All right, that's about enough of going way the heck off topic. We should probably stop there. I am now going to go back home. Oh, one of my cars has a flat tire. I originally wanted to record this with, I wanted to take out my 1964 Porsche 356 today and run that around because the weather's glorious. It's really nice in Vegas today. And I went to go open the garage and it's got a flat tire. So now I got to go figure out. I've like aired it back up. I'm going to see if it's a slow leak. If it's a slow leak, I'm going to go take it down to the nice folks at Gowden Porsche here in town who are just do amazing work and have them. I don't think it needs anything else right now. I think that's the only thing it needs. And then unpack. Oh, geez. So we just got back from 10 days from Boston. So I got to go unpack everything, take stuff to dry cleaners. I hope y'all had fun and learned something, and I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios. I always forget that I have this little cool remote control here, and I can just 3, 2, 1.